morning, everybody. So, as you may have heard, the topic today will be the stress energy tensor. I'll just write it down for those of you with short memories. So what is it exactly, and where does it come from? The central concept underlying the stress energy tensor is symmetry, and that's because continuous symmetries are associated with conserved quantities. That's a very central thing, isn't it? And specifically, we're interested in translational symmetries. Because translational symmetries give us conservation of momentum and conservation of energy. There's main points. So the conservation of momentum was first formulated by perhaps Galilei, who said that moving bodies tend to stay in their state of motion. But he thought a bit in circles at the time. He thought that moving bodies don't move in straight lines, but rather in circles. So it took until Newton to set things straight. And after his words, things moved in straight lines. Newton also gave us his mechanics, and that's important because Lagrange built upon that and formulated his own mechanics with respect to actions and Lagrangians. And so doing, he is at the state for M. Noether, who in 1915 proved that continuous symmetries are associated with conserved quantities. In field theory, we talk of conserved currents, and Noether's central result can be written as the conserved current of this form. Here, the L is the Lagrangian. This L is, on the other hand, related to how the field changes in first order, given like this. And this Killing vector is related to how the coordinates change to first order. And of course, we expect that the other Lagrange equations are also satisfied. So what's so special about these Noether currents? Well, they satisfy the continuity equation, which is to say this one. And what's so special about this? Well, writing this in integral form, we get something like this. Which relates the zero component of the current to the spatial part of the component, and specifically its flux over a surface. And if we take the surface to be large enough for physical currents, this vanishes. So we notice that this the time derivative of this quantity is zero, so we can speak about conserved charge, which is just a zero component, and it's integral over space. Well, the stress energy tensor specifically, as I said, it's associated with translational invariance. So what we get for the definition is something like this. where the L is now partial derivative and the Killing vector is a Kronecker delta. In general relativity, we have a bit of a different definition. Because it's more usual there and has other desirable properties also. So in there we use some variation with respect to the inverse metric multiplied by some factors. And we vary this kind of action of mass and energy. So it's actually derived, or you can derive it similarly to the Noether's theorem, but you also consider the variation of the metric at the same time. Okay, so I've been talking about the definition of this stress energy tensor, but what are these components then? Well, the stress tensor, which is just a spatial part. It's probably easier to do some pictures about it. So we have a surface like this. The surface is normal, and then we have some kind of force which has components in those directions. And the stress tensor is really given by a limiting procedure where we take components of the force over a unit area in a certain direction. So all the components are given by the different components of the force and the different possible surfaces we have, or where the spatial vector can point. Well, in Minkowski space, this is a bit different. Because we don't have really surfaces, we have hypersurfaces, and as such we have to speak of volumes. The definition there then becomes something like, well, it's given a relation like this, which is a bit involved. Here, this is a volume in the Minkowski space, and this is the four momentum. Well, the spatial components stay pretty much the same. So they are force over area. This is something like a pressure or a stress. The temporal components are the zero I components. They are then something like this, which if you look at this, this is just a force. No. Sorry. B zero. So this is just an energy current. And this is then over some kind of area. And the zero zero component is then just some kind of energy over a volume, so it's some kind of energy density. Well, that's about that. Lenny, would you like to tell us some juicy examples of this stress energy tensor?
I'd love to. First, let's consider the simplest possible stress energy tensor we can think of. So these are the vacuum solutions. So this is when T mu nu equals zero. Pretty simple right there. And so we have Einstein's equations that relate the stress energy tensor to the curvature of space, by this equation right here. So from this equation, if t mu nu is 0, we see that this quantity here has to be 0. And obviously, if t mu nu is 0, its trace is 0. So you can trace this equation. And it actually implies that the Ricci scalar will equal 0. And this Ricci scalar here is given in terms of the metric and some connections in this following way. Like that. So it actually depends on derivatives of the metric and in a non-simple way. So you might think that if the stress energy tensor is a 0, you would have to have a really trivial metric like Minkowski spacetime. But that's actually not true at all. You can have like Schwarzschild or De Sitter metrics, and you can still get a vanishing Ricci scalar. And that's actually one of the things you do to derive the correct form of the Schwarzschild radius when you're doing general relativity. Also, if this is 0, you might expect that there's no energy in the system. But gravitational fields can actually carry some energy. And Eric's going to tell you about that shortly. All right, so what happens? So how do we get a non-vanishing stress energy tensor? So we do that by putting stuff into our space. So I'll talk shortly about E&M. So here you have a Lagrangian of this form. And using Lowry's definitions up there, if you use the first one, the canonical way, it's pretty easy to see because these are differences of del mu, a mu's, and things like that. If you use that first definition, you'll get something that looks like this. And you've all derived this in your homework, so I'll spare you the details. And then, but if you use the second definition there, you actually get a slightly different form that looks like this. And so these two forms don't look the same. And Yvonne's going to tell you a little bit more about that later on. The fact, the relation between these two types of stress energy tensors is sort of related to CFT, which Jaha will talk about later on. So this section connects to what everybody's talking about. All right, and then lastly, I'll talk a little bit about perfect fluids. So as Lowry started to mention, the components of the stress energy tensor are related to pressure and energy density. So you get that for a perfect fluid, your stress energy tensor will take this form. And here, u mu and u nu are relativistic velocities. If you have a static fluid, it's just the first component is non-zero and the rest are. So if you plug that form in, you can kind of see how that would relate back to what Lowry said. So again, you have Einstein's equation. Oh, these should be lower. So basically, you can. So this takes a different form for like radiation, matter, and like cosmological constant. So you can choose your favorite stress energy tensors based on what kind of things you have in your field. So you know this is related to cosmology, and you take the sum of your favorite stress tensors and solve this equation. And for these cases here, it's relatively simple. It's not completely simple. But this equation here is highly nonlinear. So it's actually really non-trivial if you have some more complicated scenarios. And the last thing I should mention is the stress energy tensor needs to be conserved, like we have up there. So I'll do this first case. So you can take del nu of t mu nu, and then you get del nu of 0. So it's 0. It's obviously true. These other two cases I'll let you guys do in your ample spare time. So now Yvonne's going to tell you, actually Eric's going to tell you about how perfect fluids relate to energy conservation.
So let's do a little recap. We learned that when we have a physics that's invariant under translations in space and time, we have some conserved current, which we call the stress energy tensor. And we write the conservation of the stress energy tensor just by the statement that its divergence is 0 in a flat space time. But when we generalize and we go to curved space times, we have to replace our partial derivative with a covariant derivative. But wait a second. I mean, we don't really live in, say, a Minkowski space. We live in an expanding universe, which I'm going to draw as closed, because it's a lot easier to draw closed. And the most important thing to note here is that our expanding universe has its proper distances are proportional to a scale factor, A, which is an increasing function of time. So here we have an explicit breaking of time translational symmetry. So can we really expect energy to be conserved in GR? Well, maybe let's look at the perfect fluid stress energy tensor that Lenny talked about. Now, in the rest frame of the perfect fluid, we can write this as a particularly simple form. And when we enforce our covariant conservation of the stress energy tensor, and we choose the nu equals 0 equation, we get an equation, a differential equation, relating the energy density rho to the scale factor A. And we can solve this equation to relate the energy density directly to the scale factor. Here, W is just the parameter in the equation of state that tells us how energy density is related to pressure. So let's look at this for a few different kinds of matter. What about dust, the most exciting matter? Dust is just cold, ordinary, pressureless matter with W equals 0. And that means that the energy density scales as the negative third power of the scale factor. And now the volume of space is expanding as A cubed, so the total energy is conserved. Now, what about radiation? Here we have W equals 1/3, which means that the energy density scales as the negative fourth power of A. And again, this volume of space scales as A cubed, so that means that the total energy in radiation is decreasing as a function of time. Now we can understand this pretty easily. I mean, radiation is getting diluted by the expansion of space, just like dust. But the energy of radiation depends on its wavelength, which is getting stretched as space expands. So the energy is going down by an extra factor of 1 over a, essentially. Show this again. Can't work under pressure, apparently. What about the cosmological constant? Oops, that's wrong. Which has equation of state, W equals negative 1. That's telling us that the energy density is constant, which means that as space expands, we get a massive violation of energy conservation. So what's going on. It sure looks like for typical situations in GR, energy is not conserved. It turns out there's another way to look at this, actually. Some people like to think of the gravitational field as carrying energy and somehow canceling out these violations so that the total energy is conserved. And the way to approach that is to use Lowry's definition, oh good, it's right here, of the, the stress energy tensor with a new action that incorporates both the normal matter action and another term called the Einstein-Hilbert action, which we encountered, which is just the kind of the standard action for GR. So here we've just got the matter action that Lowry talked about, and this is the Einstein-Hilbert term. Now I'm going to define like a king-sized stress energy tensor in a similar way to what Lowry did. And I'm going to use his same definition of the matter stress energy tensor. Now, don't worry about that factor of negative 2 difference. It's not super important. You'll see why. When we vary the action, we're going to get an integral over all space of, I'm going to factor the 16 side. Oh, dear. Bear with me. Now, to save time, take my word for it that the variation of R with respect to the metric is just the Ricci tensor, and the variation of the root of the negative determinant of the metric with respect to the metric is that. We can plug this in. It's pretty easy. We just factor out the root negative g, and we can write the variation as follows. This may start to look familiar at some point. Hopefully, maybe not. Maybe I'm doing a bad job and it doesn't. But let's see what we have. We want the action to be stationary, and we have an arbitrary variation of the metric, so that means that this guy right here has to be zero. But this is just the Einstein tensor, and this is just 8 pi g times the matter energy density. Yvonne, das ist nicht gut. Verdammt. Setz dich wieder. Ah, typical Germans. What was I saying? OK, this is just Einstein's equations. We have, in the end, that our big king stress energy tensor is identically zero by Einstein's equations, because this is Einstein's equation. And probably we could have predicted that, because I mean we're varying the action with respect to the metric, which is now a dynamical quantity in GR. So the action is required to be stationary with respect to it. So obviously this is going to turn out to be zero. But I mean, this gives us an interesting kind of conundrum. We can either take the total energy, if we're going to define it in a covariant way, to be identically zero, in which case it can't tell us anything about what processes can and can't happen. Or we can take it to just be horrendously not conserved.
See, I haven't even finished. So, as you see, I haven't finished writing down my main, what I'm talking about. Oh, I don't need this. So, as you see, I'm going to talk about improvement terms. And what we want to start about is looking again at our definitions. So we had the gravitational definition and our canonical. Let's see. Canonical was T mu nu is del L del del mu phi d mu phi minus eta mu nu L. Now gravitational definition, that was just T mu nu gravitation is minus 2 over square root of minus g, and the variation of the metric, of the action with respect to the metric. So what my predecessor effectively missed to stress, this one is not necessarily symmetric, and in the most general case, not gauge invariant. There are more properties that are pose a bit of a problem. Like, for example, in GR, it's just a pseudotensor, not a tensor. And in field theories, it's often not renormalizable. So that's something we don't want to have. On the other hand, the gravitational one has very nice properties. It's definitely symmetric. And furthermore, it is gauge invariant. So what do we do with this? Let's start again by looking at this. If we start from this, we notice first of all that our conserved current is not uniquely defined. So we could as well take something like G mu is J mu plus del nu v nu mu, as long as we choose v nu mu anti-symmetric. This minus sign is important. You see, this still has the same properties. We still have d mu j mu is 0, and we still have our charge. And this is still the same. So this is still conserved. So this gives us the opportunity to define another stress energy tensor, the Belli-Infante stress energy tensor. And this is just defined as so this one is just T mu nu. For the Belli-Infante. This is just the canonical one plus the derivative of something, if I write it like that, where our v rho mu nu satisfies some antisymmetric property as well. This arises directly from our conserved current here. So we see we have an ambiguity in coupling the fields to gravity, but we still get the same charge and the conserved current. So if you want, you can work out the explicit form of this. It's quite easy, and you have 2 weeks of holidays, so that should be doable. So now you might ask, what does it give us? It's just, okay, now we have another definition. What does it help us? I mean, now we have three of them. But it has some important properties. For one thing, we have that our del mu T mu nu Belli-Infante is 0 still. And most important, you can prove that it is always symmetric. That's how we define it. Nice. What can we do with this? we can look at the relation between the canonical, the gravitational, and our Belafonte tensor.
Okay, canonical and Belafonte we did. So what about the rest?
We can vary the action. Then we have something like delta S is integral d dx minus g del mu j. We derived this at some point when deriving the Noether current. If you don't remember, it might be a nice task to do that again. So here we can use the property that we can write this and our conservation. If we use this, we can deform this into an integral t mu nu del nu epsilon nu epsilon nu. And now we know that this is a metric. So what we can do is just write this with a factor of 1/2. I just rename some indices. T mu nu del mu epsilon nu plus del nu epsilon mu. So far I haven't done much. But now if we look at the metric, how does our metric transform? This is just del x alpha, del x mu, del x beta, del x nu, g alpha beta. If we plug in here our infinitesimal transformation, then we just get something like g mu nu minus del mu epsilon nu plus, oh, wrong one, del nu epsilon mu. So now if we look at this, this implies that our variation of the metric is just minus del mu epsilon nu plus del nu epsilon mu. If you compare it, we can just plug it in. This means we have minus 1/2 integral d dx square root of minus g t mu nu del g mu nu. But this means we can just write our energy momentum tensor as t mu nu equals minus 2 over minus g del s del g mu nu. Isn't this beautiful? We have related our different definitions. So I think to contemplate this, we want to ask a favor of the gods. Could we have the screen down, please?
Yes, it works.
Wow. Perfect. Perfect. Actually, I don't need it. I just had to do this at least once. Thank you very much. So, last point. After we had our fun, what is the implication of this? Let's look at what our conservation of the current implies. Actually, this is ahead, if I want to stick to mine. So if we plug in this definition, and we remember that our stress energy tensor is conserved, we just get something like t mu nu del mu epsilon nu. So here again, we use that it is a metric, write it like this. But at this point, we remember this does not only look like a variation of the metric. In conformal fields, this is also the killing equation. So what we can do is just plug in the killing equation. And what we get is something like dd t mu mu del rho epsilon rho. So what does this tell us? I jumped a bit. I don't have an integration here. Good that these things are lying around everywhere. So since this is 0, this is not 0, so this one has to be 0. So our stress energy tensor is not only symmetric, but in this case also traceless. And if we plug in here our conformal Killing equation, we see that we get something like 1 over d d dx t mu mu d rho epsilon rho. So what this tells us is that we have a if we have a traceless tensor, then our variation of the action vanishes. So this means that in conformal fields, if we have tracelessness of the tensor, this implies that our action is invariant under conformal transformations. That's a very important property. So, and I think I'm pretty much over time, so you remember what we talked about.
Okay, I will talk about quantum corrections. Okay, let's consider a scale transformation of a vector field. This can also be represented as a change in the space-time metric. If the Lagrangian is invariant under this transformation, then from Norton's theorem, we can deduce that there is a conserved current, and we'll call it d nu, which is the dilatation, and it is related to the stress energy tensor by okay, now let us consider if we have if we include quantum effects on the Lagrangian, that is our G will now depend on the energy scale. Here beta is the beta function that relates, that encodes how the coupling constants depend on the energy scale. And if we have this coupling constant dependent on the energy scale, and then our potential will now also depend on the beta function. So we'll have an effective potential, hence we'll have an effective action. That is, the action will also depend on the beta function. Okay, let us go back to the EM example over there. That is, if we take that Lagrangian, let me write it as an action. If we have this action here, uh, And then from what we already have there, we already have our stress energy tensor there. If we take the trace without including the quantum effects, that is, if we only have our coupling constant independent of the energy scale, and then we will just have the trace being zero. But if we include this, the quantum effects, that is, our G will now be a function of the beta function. So will our action. So from this definition, using this definition over here, then this will not be zero if we include the quantum effects. But we will have, for this example, we will have, if we take the coupling constant to be E, we will have the trace of the stress energy tensor will not be necessarily zero unless the beta function is equal to zero. And this is called trace anomaly. That is the symmetry of the scale transformation symmetry of this Lagrangian classically cannot be promoted into quantum symmetry because the trace will not be necessarily zero, meaning that, as Yvonne has just said, the action will not necessarily be scale invariant under this transformation if we include quantum effects. And then now, I think we can proceed to lambda algebra.
We
Okay, I will talk about something in stress energy tensor in two-dimensional conformal field theory. First, let's review what is presented before. We know that a stress energy tensor is conserved. That's the first property. And the second one is it's traceless, in conformal field theory. And we can always improve it to be symmetric. Now, from these three properties, we can derive the complex plane stress energy tensor to be
like this. We call this to be holomorphic, and this one is anti-holomorphic. As these two are separated, and we can now just consider the holomorphic part, and the anti-holomorphic part is just similar to that. Now, what we can get from this holomorphic part if we act it on some field. Let's see three cases. The first one is TZ acting on T omega. The second one is TZ acting on some primary field. And third one is TZ acting on arbitrary field. This is a primary field. Now let's see the first case. We claim that the radial ordering of TZ acting on T omega is asymptotically to this expression. Now, we want to use this expression to get something. And we expand T to the Laurent series like this. Then we can get from this expression the nth mode, which is Ln, is some counter integral around zero. Then we can use these two formula to derive the commutator of Lm and Ln. This is just equal to the double counter integral. Now we have this expression in this derivation. Then we can insert this formula to here. And after some calculation, you can get this is just the Virasoro algebra. So we have derived the Virasoro algebra. From this two expression. And now the second case. Firstly, let's see what is the primary field. Primary field is just the field that transforms like this. Now we can rewrite this expression to the infinitesimal expression, which is, remember that we are just considering the holomorphic part. And using the Cauchy integral formula, we can rewrite this as the counter integral around omega. On the other hand, we can get from the QFT the infinitesimal transformation of the field should be the commutator of the conserved charge and the field itself, which we can rewrite it as another counter integral. This is another counter integral. Yeah, the radial ordering of TZ acting on phi. Then comparing these two formula, we can get this part should be equal to this part. And so now let's see the third case. If we act this, this should be asymptotically true. In the third part, we want to act TZ on any field. So now we want to expand this to Laurent series around omega. So we can again use the inversion of this formula, which gave us the m minus m minus 2 mode to be the counter integral around omega. And again, we want to use the Cauchy integral formula to get the derivative to the nth power. Then use this formula. We can see the specific case, which is phi equal to identity and n equal to 0. then what we get? We get this is just the holomorphic part of stress energy tensor. So we have derived another way to interpret stress energy tensor to be the one of the descendants of identity. So that's what I'm presenting. And let me just remind you, after the colloquium, there will be some free snacks downstairs in bistro. Thank you.